Now, when you eat your supper tonight, will you be sitting at the kitchen table? That used to be the norm, but a recent survey says that's not necessarily the case anymore. According to the appliance manufacturer June, 72% of American adults said they ate at the table when they were growing up. Today, it's down to about 48%. Where else are we eating? 30% said the couch has become their primary eating place. That's up from 12% in their youth. 17% said the bedroom, up from 6% while growing up. To put it another way, the number of people who eat at the table is about the same as the number of people now who eat on the couch or in the bedroom. So why are we moving away from the table, and what does it say about us? Seneca Elliott is an assistant professor in sociology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Her areas of expertise include families and their food practices and interactions. She's also the co-author of the book Pressure Cooker, Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. Seneca, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, now, this survey we mentioned isn't a super scientific thing, but that said, does it seem to match up with trends that our formal sit down with the family around the table meal may not be what it once was?
Yeah. So just to be clear, this is probably not nationally representative data, right? So we need to take the survey with a grain of salt. But that said, there is a potential that it's capturing something that's going on more broadly in the U.S., you know. So one of the things we know is that there are far more people today than in the past who live alone. And that in and of itself can affect how people decide to eat their meals, that whether they decide to sit at the table by themselves, well, maybe not. Maybe they'll stand at a kitchen counter or sit at the couch or a chair, you know, so somewhere more comfortable. They might think of the table as more of a formal setting when you're eating with others. So if you're eating on your own, then, you know, you don't really think of the table as being the place to necessarily sit down. So that could be one explanation, that there are just more people who live alone. And so when they're eating at home, which is what this study was looking at, they're not necessarily sitting down at that dinner table to have their food. There are lots of other explanations. And, you know, our homes are now designed in ways that really de-emphasize the dining room, even if you have a dining room. So that's maybe not necessarily now the focal point in a house as it used to be. So people might be just hanging around a kitchen island or in a lot of the working class and poor families that were included in the five-year study that I recently did, and that's the basis of the book Pressure Cooker, the families didn't even have kitchen tables. They this was a commodity that they just didn't have, or they didn't have room for them in their small, cramped homes. So there are a lot of things that might be going on that are shaping these findings.
Yeah, we heard from Nura on Facebook, who writes, as you just said, maybe they live in small apartments and don't have room for a table. Maybe they work late hours and don't have time to sit with their families. Maybe they're eating at soup kitchens or homeless shelters. And that fits in with a lot of what you and your co-authors who are on the show to talk about Pressure Cooker looked at, the way our economic realities drive our food choices, or in some cases, lack of food choices.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking Nora might have read our book. So one of the things that we also argue, in addition to maybe not having space in your home for a table, more and more Americans are now working non-standard and unpredictable jobs. And so this means that they don't really have very much control over their schedules. They might be in the graveyard shift. They might be working different shifts on different days of the week. And these shifts are often, you know, colliding with the dinner time. And so that means that they might not be home for that standard dinner hour. So this has been a huge shift just in the last four decades, which means that, and this is especially affecting poor and working class families who are much more likely to work in non-standard hours and to report that they work during dinner time hours, potentially making food for other people. But one of the things that we talk about in our book is that this idea that there's some tension and some challenges around meeting the expectation to assemble the family around the table at the end of the day, This isn't new. When we dug into the research, the historical record shows that it's never been easy for American families to gather around the table at the end of the day, even though we have this mythical idea that this used to be very easy. We have this kind of 1950s Leave It to Beaver idea of families sitting around the table. In fact, a lot of families couldn't achieve this, and these were those who did often did so with the help of servants. So they would have people coming into their home to help them prepare these meals and serve these meals. And of course, those domestic servants weren't at home to do this work for their own families. So there's always been a lot of inequalities in who gets to have the time and the resources to sit down at the end of the day around a kitchen table or a dining table.
Talking to Seneca Elliott, assistant professor in sociology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, co-author of the book Pressure Cooker, looking at changes in how, when, and where we eat. A new non-scientific survey suggests we're less prone to eat at the table, maybe, than we used to be. And Seneca, do we feel guilty that we can't live up to this, what we see as this golden age ideal that may never have been reality in the first place?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That we found in our research that a lot of people felt that they were letting their families down if they didn't manage to assemble everyone around the table for a healthy, ideally home-cooked meal at the end of the day. And I think this has been so entrenched in our ideas of what it means to be a family and to do family life. And I think some of the alarm that people have expressed about the fact that, you know, families aren't eating dinner together means that this is a big pressure bearing down on families. I will say that, you know, there have been a lot of studies over the years that have argued that families sitting around the dinner table, that this is good for children. It maybe makes children happier, improves their academic performance even, and other outcomes. But there's more recent research has shown us that that research isn't actually accounting for other aspects of family life that may be informing those findings. So families with more resources may be more likely to pull off that end of the day, everyone sitting around the table eating. And it's those parental resources that are, in fact, shaping children's outcomes, not the other way around. Does that make sense?
Definitely. So the reasons that may prevent us from sitting around the table together might also be driving some of those outcomes for kids. It's not the fact of sitting around the table itself.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Now, so we've drawn the Go ahead.
I wanted to turn to eating on the couch. That probably means we're eating in front of the TV. Now, I know in my childhood and in my parenthood, the TV trays come out for a special occasion, an important sporting event or something like that. As part of your research, did you see people eating in screen-centered ways, gathering around in front of the TV to watch something while they eat?
Well, certainly in a lot of the families that we embedded ourselves in, and we spent time, especially in 12 families' homes, these were all lower-income families, and they were all part of the broader five-year study that followed over 150 families from all walks of life. And certainly screens were often on in these households, and whether that was at dinner time or other times, but partly because they were always on, people weren't focusing just on them. They were on, and it was kind of on in the background. So it wasn't like all eyes were on the TV. It was just there and kind of part of the background. But, you know, it really varied. We had dinner with one family, and she had a friend over to eat, and also his daughter was staying with her. This is very complicated. And his daughter's boyfriend was also there for dinner. And the mother had her two small children there. Well, she had a little tiny table, and it had three chairs around it. So in the end, her two sons and her friend who was there for dinner ate at the table. She sat in a chair near the TV and occasionally looked at the TV. And her friend's daughter and her boyfriend sat in a bedroom in a back room where they ate. So we saw those kinds of dynamics too, where there was kind of a mix of of families coming together, helping each other out. The friend who was eating the meal was homeless, and so his daughter was staying with this participant of ours in part because she needed a place to live, and he needed a good meal. And so she was helping him out with the idea that when things got better for him, he might be able to help her out. But it did end up being this kind of hodgepodge of people sitting here, there, and everywhere. And if she was the one responding to a survey, she might have said she sat on the couch and she watched a screen. But it wouldn't really fully capture what was going on in that household.
We continue our conversation about where we eat our meals when we're at home. A new survey, a non-scientific sort of survey from an appliance manufacturer anyway, says a lot of us grew up eating at a dining room table. Only 48% regularly do so today. A lot of us are eating on the couch or in the bedroom, at least according to that survey. Seneca Elliott is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of British Columbia. Her areas of expertise include families and their food practices and interactions. She's co-author of the book Pressure Cooker, Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you eat your meals when you're at home? Is it important that you eat at a table of some sort, kitchen, dining room, or otherwise? Or do you eat on a couch in a bedroom? Do you feel bad if you're not doing it right, if you're not doing meals right? And what does right mean to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to our callers now. Karen is with us in Appleton. Karen, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment that my 14-year-old son had come home from a friend's house and said, "Mom, the weirdest thing happened. We sat around the table with my friend's family, and we ate our food around the table." And it was eye-opening to me to think that that's not a norm in our family, that we need to focus more on spending that time together, that he went to somebody's house and they ate at the table, and he thought that was weird.
So how do things work out at your house usually, Karen, if I may ask?
Everybody has a different work schedule, yeah. So you know, some people are eating cereal, some people are eating supper at a different time, so it's difficult for us all to get together when the kids are in sports and we work opposite schedules.
I'm there too, Karen. I feel bad about this sometimes. Do you?
Yeah, I feel really bad that we don't all four of us sit together and have those, you know, daily conversations, that we have them separately in the car ride or not together as a family.
Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story. Seneca, I bet a lot of families are in the same boat as Karen's and mine, and a lot of us feel bad about it. Should we, or have we just put too much symbolic importance on that meal together?
I think that we have probably put a lot of symbolic importance on that meal. And what the research suggests is that there are lots of ways to connect with our family members. It doesn't have to happen around a meal, although that can be a nice way and a way that a lot of people do. I think that our modern lives are making it harder and harder to accomplish that. And Karen mentions a couple things: work schedules and also children's involvement in extracurricular activities. And this was another big thing that we found in our research, that parents were busy, you know, shuttling their kids from this activity to the next. And so that this really interfered with the dinner hour. But what research also tells us is that it might be surprising that parents today are actually spending more quality time with their children than were parents in the 1960s. And so I think this is really surprising, but we're actually more likely to be with our children, to be talking with them, to be maybe doing homework with them, compared to the 1960s, which is often that time when we think about, you know, family life as being, you know, very close and full of, you know, harmony and solidarity. So it might give Karen some sense that those car rides are a great time to connect. You know, families can find their own way to have those moments within the day to connect and to pass along, you know, family knowledge and memories.
Karen, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Pete with us in Wausau. Pete, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, when we were raising our kids who are in their 20s now, we took that time and opportunity to teach them, kind of touching on what you're saying, interaction, conversation, courtesy, and contribution. So we would eat at the table all together as a family and have conversation. And then we taught the kids things like nobody leaves the table until everybody's done, and the kids all participated in clearing the table, putting the food and dishes away, and so forth. And that was even when they were like 5, 6, 7 years old. We were starting them young, doing all that stuff. For fun, for changing things up a little bit once in a while, about once a week, we would have special time where we'd have a movie and put it on TV and maybe do a pizza and sit at the coffee table. But the rest of the time, there might have been music on in the background, but no screen or anything like that. And it was just a great time to catch up and be a family.
And Pete, was it ever hard to pull it off, especially maybe in the high school years, if the kids had after school whatever?
We always made it work. That was our priority.
All right. Pete, thanks a lot for the call. Seneca, I think a lot of people want to make it work. It's not always as easy to pull off.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people are making it work. So, you know, more than half of American families say they sit down on a really 5 to 7 nights a week with their family to eat a meal. So it's not like this is just vanishing completely. It's still happening. And, for those families that think that this is an important ritual, and I kind of appreciated Pete's like emphasis on these really positive things that they were conveying. And it sounds like it was really positive. I will say that in our research and in other research, there's also some evidence that that dinner time can be a time of conflict, when parents are feeling tired, kids are cranky, it's the end of the day, and your parents are trying to get kids to eat with a fork and use a napkin or whatever it might be. And it can be this moment when there's some sense of frazzleness. And in our research, we found in all the meals that we observed, usually at least one person, sometimes more, usually a child, would refuse to eat something on the plate, and that would lead to some conflict with parents trying to make sure that the kids were getting the food they needed to sleep through the night and feel good the next day, and kids, protesting about having to eat this thing that they hadn't recognized as food.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about that. Seneca Elliott is with us from the University of British Columbia, looking at our changing meal habits. Cheryl is with us in Conover now. Cheryl, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your story, Cheryl?
I was a full-time working mother and periodically went away on a plane. And our boys and my first husband, we ate dinner together. And it was my job to make sure that we ate dinner together. If it was a night of athletics or a night I had a meeting, we had an earlier meal or a little later meal, or we had a lighter meal, or we had a heavier meal. Or on certain occasions, we would go out for a meal. But that was really important for me to sit down with my two sons every evening for dinner. And we did it, and they're married to this day, and they do it with their kids.
Cheryl, thanks a lot for that story. Seneca, she made it work. It took some improvisation, though, it sounded like. Is that something you saw in the families that you followed for years?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is what's happening. We have these broader things with Cheryl points out, she was a full-time working mom. She had to travel for work. And so we have all these things that now I think are interfering with, the way that parents, might have done this in the past, where you're all home by 5 or even 4 and you're cooking a meal and then you're eating it. So we had families who would be prepping vegetables and cooking food in batches on the weekends so that they could, quickly get those meals together, or throwing a pizza in the oven so that they could get everybody together around the table when, there was a moment when people were around. So absolutely, people are improvising. People are making do with what they've got. And it's interesting that Cheryl points out this really important moment of, socializing with her kids. And one of the things I wanted to mention when you asked me about people watching screens is my undergraduate students are now telling me that they often will eat meals with their families, but their families are not in Canada, so they're, internationally. And so they're watching their families on FaceTime or Skype, and they're eating together in that way. And it made me think about this phenomenon of mukbang, which comes from South Korea, which is watching other people eat food. And I have students who tell me that I sometimes just watch other people eat food while they're eating because they kind of want to disconnect with someone. So we're coming up with some very creative solutions, I think, to some of these modern dilemmas that we face. I have a good friend who has made breakfast the main meal of the day because that's the only time that all four of her family members are around at the same time.
We'll leave it there for now. Seneca, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Seneca Elliott, assistant professor in sociology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. She's the co-author of Pressure Cooker, Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. We talked with her about a new survey suggesting that more and more of us are eating our meals somewhere other than at the kitchen or dining room table. Where do you eat your meals when you're at home? Table, couch, bedroom, basement, laundry room, roof? How come? Let us know over at the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.